Security excellence through education. Corporate Security University.
Hey, what is going on, everybody? Here we are again with another great chapter of the Corporate Security University podcast. My name is Carlos Francisco.
And I'm Scott Walker.
This is Corporate Security University.
Security excellence through education.
And Scotty Waddy, my buddy, we have Jim White out here with us. And if y'all just kind of follow Jim on LinkedIn and everything else, you will see all of the incredible companies he has worked for. And one of the coolest things about Jim is that back in the days, he was part of this police department. Scotty, you've seen this before, man. Yeah, it's like police slash fire slash EMT. Like, these guys were doing it all. Last I heard, Jim, I think there's only like 60 or something of these things throughout the entire country. So it's kind of cool. But Jim, how are you, bud?
Doing good, guys. I'm doing good. Glad to be here. Glad to talk about this with you.
Yeah, I think we were just kind of breaking down what we're going to talk about. And everybody knows you're in Corporate Security University. There's no time to study these things up and do an entire we kind of wing it. We go with the knowledge that we have in our brains and we move forward with it. You know, but that's how you know, Scotty, that people authentic. Are really professionals. Yeah, and they understand what's going on in the industry. And let's just, you know, break it down. But this one is going to be about people. And people in the security industry. And I'm really excited. Who knows where we're going to go? We might go into leadership, management, people themselves, situations that they find themselves in, and everything else, and other types of situations we might have been where leadership may ask you to do things that doesn't fit within a policy, procedure, state laws, who knows, right? But we're going to wing this thing. What do you think, Scotty?
This is what's great about talking with guys like Jim. Can't wait to hear from you, Jim. But he comes from a law enforcement leadership background. Now he's in corporate security leadership. And so, you know, we get to compare and contrast all these great lessons learned that Jim has. So I'm super excited to have him on the show.
Yeah, I'm excited, Jim. I'm going to throw out a topic out there, man, and then we start thinking about it. Let's go back to the basics. What are some of the basic stuff that you guys think that probably started in corporate security? You know, ASIS International, throwing a shout out there, started in 1955, right? What do you think in 1955 was working really well that still possibly may work really well today? Who wants to kick this one off?
What do you think, Jim?
Probably your security guard was probably the first invention that you guys had. You know, there was no technology, so to speak, back there. So having the guard walking around the yard, jingling his chains so people hear him when he was walking. You know, that's probably the first thing that, and I think today that's what most people equate with security, as a security guard. They don't necessarily think about the cameras in the access control stuff. They'll get to that. But I think when you say security, the first thing that comes to people's minds is that security guard.
Yeah, I agree. My wife actually, it's quite funny whenever people that we first meet ask my wife what I do, or ask me in front of my wife what I do, I'm like, oh, you know, I'm just in security. And the first thing I usually get is, oh, security guard. Oh, yeah. Yep. Definitely. Yeah. Thank you. And we kind of, you know, and I'm okay with that. What do you think, Scotty?
Yeah. Well, I was thinking of the night watchman, and having been in Europe, they've been doing security a lot longer than we Americans have. And I've been fortunate enough to be at the Tower of London when they are doing their rounds and they're securing the tower, and they carry the keys. And now, back when I saw it, it was the Queen's keys, right? Now they have the King, of course. And so they would carry the keys and they would go and they'd lock up the tower. But these guys, they had four armed soldiers around this, the Queen's keys. And they protected the guy who would just, his job was to go and lock up the Tower of London. And I said, well, you know, why all the security for this, the guy who's got the keys? And it was that serious a situation. By the way, they have been locking the Tower of London and doing a ceremony the same way for hundreds of years, even through the Blitzkrieg in World War II. So yeah. When we talk about security, you know, look, as Americans, we're applying something that's fairly new for us, but right. Europe and other areas that, you know, they've been doing this for a lot longer than we have, but it's unfortunate that public perception is still that that it's the uniform security guard. And usually in Hollywood, Hollywood does not glorify the career field. And it makes it really hard when we have folks that are transitioning into it, like you, Jim, or we have folks that are coming up and growing up in the security industry, because it's a great industry. It's a multi-billion dollar a year industry. But the public perception is to that, Carlos, oh, you must be a security guard.
Yeah.
Well, no. Not only that, I think I'm sorry, Carlos, I didn't mean to cut you off. I think the other part of that is because of the media, portrayals of all that stuff, everybody thinks they know what security is.
Yeah.
I know what your job isn't that tough. I know it when it is so much more, especially when you get into the upper levels. You're not just thinking about the access control, the video management, the guard services. You're talking about travel security. You're talking about executive protection. You're talking about, in some cases, protected cybersecurity structures and all of those different things that go with it. Carlos, that's your big thing, is the all the data centers that you're in charge of. Those are things that people don't think about. And if physical security isn't there, the basics of physical security, then all that stuff's at risk.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting, Jim. First of all, see, thank you for having the insight to just directly talk about the human as the beginning. And it's funny, Scotty, that you brought up England. I read something on the security history one time. I get to get a little geeky when it comes to that kind of stuff. And back in 1737, the English government was trying to really protect the House of Reps, or whatever it is that they call it. It had a lot to do with tax revenue and growth and all this other stuff. So that was really the first security per se, because prior to that was kind of the militaristic style of security. These soldiers, they were holding these keys, like you were saying. But it's really interesting. And the English Parliament was also the first one in 1745 to actually do the first security studies to see if that was prevented. And there's a guy out of England named Henry Fielding that was actually what they're supposedly known as, the first crime preventer, in 1748. Around that time he was hanging out. So that's something I learned a little bit there at Corporate Security University. But hey, but that's a great one.
Back to basics. This is back to basics. I mean, this is what's so fascinating about talking about this, because has security really changed since the 1770s, like what we're saying? I mean, what do you guys think?
It really hasn't. How we achieve it has. That's where the technology parts come in. But, when you look at security, you want to make sure only the authorized people who are at a company are allowed to be in there, right? And so that goes back to the days of the guard at the gate checking IDs as the folks came into the facility. All the modern crime that we have now with the workplace violence and a lot of stuff that's added to it. So there's a little bit more perhaps intense level of why we need to have that level of security. But yeah, you want to make sure only authorized people are accessing it. And then now with the advent of the internet and information sharing, we want to make sure that only the right people have access to our information, and it's not going, it's not the spies anymore with little cameras anymore. It's just somebody plugging in a USB drive into a laptop and taking pictures of stuff and sending that off. So I think the basics have always been there. It's just how we now achieve those basics.
Yeah, I think the big change for me, gents, is what came afterwards, with alarms and technology and all this other stuff. But other than that, I think security still stays the same. If you probably were to ask people if observe and report was what they were doing back in that, 1800s, I'm going to probably say that it was about the same thing, but with a different twist, right? Because there wasn't any laws or rules and regs. So I'm sure they had all different types of weapons, all different weird things. Because remember, these were like private owners back then in the late 1700s, early 1800s that were hiring, the town goon squad, man, to do security for them, right? So I'm sure they didn't sit down and write some amazing policies and procedures, and they sit down and say, well, that's a higher liability for our company, so we shouldn't.
Right.
Let's go ahead and I'm a little risk averse on that one, or let's go ahead and risk transfer. Right. So I think that has changed on the point that at least corporate security has definitely become more corporate. But
security is still security. You got to protect something, right? Assets, reputation, kind of thing. I think reputation was definitely added later on, but a big part of it.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with that. I think what we look at now, and even back in the day when there wasn't really all the technology, you had to identify what was critical, you know, what processes, what people, what procedures, what equipment. Is it just intellectual property or is it actual, like in the case of, I used to work in the utility industry. Is it, you know, a big 500 kilowatt transformer that needs to be protected? That's, you know, those are different things that you have to look at. So what's critical to each business, to each site even, is going to change. And then once you know what's critical, then again, the basics stay the same. Then you got to know what your threats are. So what is going to attack those things that you find to be critical? And then once you understand what your threats are, then you got to look at what you have in place and where are your vulnerabilities and how can we then mitigate those vulnerabilities? You know, you identify what your risks are and there's, you know, you either accept your risk. Yeah, that's risky, but we're going to do it anyways. Or you transfer that, how you transfer it, you get some insurance in case something happens, right? Or it's too risky, we're not going to do that, right? there's a number of ways that you can deal with the risk, but you know, having all of those things laid out before you is how you identify what you're going to do to mitigate.
Do you think we're seen as risk management professionals, though, in corporate security?
In my company that I currently work for, no. I'm looked at as more of a guard manager and but we do have so much stuff that we bring to the table that so many people don't understand. And all of my years of experience that I bring to what I do now is all on the risk assessment side of stuff. And I used to do it all the time whenever I would show up at a scene. That's all I was doing, you know, being either a law enforcement officer or being a firefighter or an EMT. I'm looking and I'm surveying and I'm determining what risk there are at this scene. And I do the same thing now. And I pull out these different things and people look at me like, aren't you just the guard guy? You know,
No, I'm not just a guard guy, but thank you very much. You know, this is one of those questions, gents, that if you ever sat at a dinner or something and somebody asks, you know, who in history would you like to bring back or sit down with and have a conversation with, right? Be interesting. And like in our field, if we could bring back those Alan Pinkerton kind of folks, Mr. Washington Brink, Edwin Holmes, you know, all these old folks that created all these big companies, they'd be like, hey, what do you think it's so different about when you kicked off? Oh, by the way, let me give you a tour of my site, right? And let's talk about that. And what you were doing compared to what we're doing today. I'd love to see what they would say, man.
Yeah. I think you'll find out it would be a lot of the same. I think people tend to take their security, their place in the world for granted. You know, they're not very aware of their surroundings typically. They're not very aware of what risks are presented to the company or who really wants that information that the company is producing. You know, they're making a widget and that widget's way different than any other widget out there. And what makes it so? Everybody else wants to know what makes it so. And if they're not taking care of what makes it so much different, someone's going to get that really easily. You know, Steve Jobs was a big proponent of security, and you guys know about Apple and all the security that goes on there. I've heard so many folks that come out of the military that go to work for Apple and they'll say, oh my gosh, they got way more security than we ever had. And the reason for that, Steve Jobs, God bless his soul, was a very smart man. And he knew when he was touring other companies, what was going to be a moneymaker. And he stole those ideas from other companies, and he wanted to make sure nobody was going to do that to him. That's why Apple has such high security standards. He doesn't want to be
interesting,
you know, having security, you know, CEOs from other companies go through and taking his ideas. So it is at the nth level, you know, for Apple.
I've experienced something similar but opposite to that, Jim, which is interesting to talk about. Where I've had CEOs point to the whiteboard behind them and say, you see all that that nobody else in the whole company could understand, but the CEO and a few select executives who understand the where the company's going, and then go, yeah, try to steal that. You'll be 5 years behind us still. And so it's interesting to talk about, because I think when we talk about going back to basics, we're talking about protecting people, processes, and technology, you know, or people, places, and things, you know, some people say. And so we're talking about mostly very physical assets, because even when we talk about cybersecurity, we're still talking about physically protecting that server rack or that center. But oftentimes I think we are at odds with how security gets done. And that's something, I mean, Carlos knows this, and I was on a conference all day yesterday where the theme was, we have to speak business as security leaders and corporate security leader. And sure, you know, I don't disagree at all. Of course, I think that's what we should be doing. But it's interesting when you have some security leaders. Good example you just provided, Jim, was Apple. You know, hey, I want to protect all of my secrets, so I'm never going to let somebody come inside who's not supposed to be there. And then you have transverse, same industry, but transverse of that is, go ahead and steal it. You're still going to be, we're so far ahead of everybody. Go ahead and steal our secrets. I dare you. Right now, that's a, you know, maybe a unique experience or a unique viewpoint, because I don't think all businesses share that. But you know, how do we overcome that as security leaders? Sure. We speak. And I think we've seen, at least I've seen in the last 10 years, Carlos, you've been doing this longer than I have. And Jim, I think you've been doing it around that amount of time too. But the security industry, I've seen grow a lot, or at least business accepting security leaders who speak business, or at least us making business cases for everything that we're doing. Yeah. Whereas maybe 20 years ago, and it depended on your industry. You know, if you're in aerospace, yeah, it was important. If the company thought it was important. Walt Disney, good example, Carlos. You know, we've talked about this. But I have a feeling that we still have, we're like halfway up the mountain. That's just the sense I get. Like, we're not even, we can't even see the peak through the clouds where we should be. Even though we're talking about it a lot, and that's not bad, it's good. But I still think we have a long ways to go. What do you guys think?
I think you're right. I think we do have a long ways to go. I think the arrogance that you're talking about with some of those companies, you know, I go back to IBM. IBM, when they had the PC, had that very same arrogance. Go ahead. You guys are never going to be able to do that. How many PCs does IBM make now?
Yeah.
Zero, right? Because yeah, people went and reverse engineered. What the arrogance of these companies that have that mentality, they don't understand that people that reverse engineer their stuff are as gifted as the people who originally thought up that idea and invented that idea. They may not do it exactly the same. That's why it's reverse engineering, but they end up getting the same result. And that arrogance is something that you have to be able to educate the folks on and bring up examples of such as the IBM and other companies out there who thought that very same way and now are out of that whole realm because of that arrogance that they had.
Man, that's really good stuff. I also agree with some of that, and I think it's great. Though there are some companies that really, like you were saying, Scott, could care less. I think they, you know, they've reached a point that they just, and man, I know some, I'm very close to some of those companies. So very, very interesting. Let me ask you guys another question then. What is it that the security officer or the security industry, let's say, is doing well today? Like really, really well. If you could think of a couple of things, you know, and a couple of things come to mind right off the bat for me, you know, they're doing really well at becoming more educated, like you said, in corporate. We still have a lot of work to do, so they're getting better. They're becoming more open and into benchmarking and really understand other people. I think so. I've reached out to a lot of folks and everybody's very open on those things. They're doing better at listening, I think, to feedback. I'm going to say maybe to keep it very simple, like on the vendor side and companies that are mid-sized companies, they're really trying their best to do that. So I kicked off with a couple there. What do you guys are thinking that we're doing really well today?
Go ahead, Jim.
Got to go. No, I'll let you jump in and I'll fill in.
Well, Carlos stole my first one, which was education. But, you know, I think that's because we're getting the millennial generation in and they're super educated, which is great. But I'll say that I think the from even the lowest in the rung of security. So whether that be your security analyst, your security officer, your GSOC operator, junior technicians, they are all really good with technology, you know, and I think they're more worldly, you know, and I don't know if that's a social media thing that because they can see everything that's going on around the world more than any other generation could in the same amount of time. But I get the sense that they're just much more comfortable with technology for the most part, even though some of those folks who maybe are more or some of our more senior in age members, but they're working in a entry level security role. You know, you put them in front of a computer and you're like, hey, you're the new badging person and here's how you do the badging. They get it and they're great at it. So I think it's technology adoption doing real well.
Yeah, I think that's a part of it too. I think if you go back, 20, 30 years, when there's a company called SIS, Security Industry Specialist, that came into existence. And when they came into existence, they had a model for their officers that was different than everybody else. Everybody else, it was very low pay. You got, you know, the guy that was not a real go-getter type stuff. And what they did is they brought in off-duty cops and they changed that bar. And they took off at a fast pace and were getting, you know, they had for years and years the Apple contract. They had a lot of other companies coming to them because all of a sudden they saw that they had a high level of person on the ground for them. And it wasn't just that guy that you couldn't even speak to get him to understand what you wanted him to do that day, right? So I think the level of individual in the security industry went up. Now it's kind of tapered down a little bit too, because companies got tired of paying that high, high end security guard. So it's a little bit of a struggle, but I think, and Carlos, you'll be familiar with this, you know, that white glove service. I think for the most part, the guards that work for me, one of the things I emphasize on them is to be visible and to be approachable. You know, and you look at it, you can really have no better security than great customer service. You see somebody walking through a facility that looks lost or doesn't have the right credential and you stop, hey, can I help you? Who are you here to see? Well, you know, that letting them know, one, that you're there to help them, and then you take care of their need. But if it's somebody that's got bad intentions, what's the message that they're getting is, well, I can't sneak into this place. These guys are all over it. You know, and they won't let me go anywhere in this building. They're going to escort me to where I need to go. They're going to make sure that I've got what I need. They don't have the credential. Oh, hey, let's go back to the desk. We'll get you the credential and then I'll take you to jail. You know, so that white glove service, I think is really the human aspect of corporate security that I think is what makes us stand out. Now, you go to places where they don't have that and you walk out. I had an experience with one of my own guards who didn't know who I was. And yeah. I said, hey, I'm Jim. And the guard said, yeah. So, if that was anybody else that would come to them with that, I would be mortified. And then once they found out who I was, then I got a whole different approach. And that's not what we want. We want that same approach for no matter who shows up, right?
Right.
Oh, Lord, Jim. That's such a softball you just threw me, man. It's like, Jesus Christ. But I think you're right. I think one of the biggest things that the industry, as we move forward into this future of, I think, a lot of softer people, people that want to be catered to and taken care of and to be listened to and all that other stuff, is the ability to bring in a customer-centric security company or somebody that, you know, or a team that understands that, look, throw my name, says security on my back, on my chest, on my arm sleeve, whatever the case may be. And I may have a badge of some kind. I'm really just a guest services person with a badge. You know, I'm just a customer service person with a badge. First of all, you can get a lot more information by just being that way than just being the security officer or security person. Right. And like you said, you know, that's really what our clients want. That's really what our people want. That's really what the people that I work with every single day, that's what they want. They just want somebody to be nice, say hi to them every single day. You know, a lot of our customer service measurements that we take with the company I'm with today is on the customer side. It's like, how well is the security treating you? And you will see that the responses that we get, it's all about how great they were and how they were able to take care of them and how they were able to help them. It's never how they're able to keep me so safe and secure. Like, that's never what we get. So if companies today in the security industry would just think of it that way, to where, yeah, you know, we still got to think about bombs and bad guys and all that good stuff, of course, that comes with the territory. But if you spend a lot more time just on customer-centric training and education and making sure that your culture is driven that way, like when officers don't do the right thing, you actually go and you take care of that and you say, that's not how we're going to do it here, bud, you know, and change that culture slowly. I mean, I think you win. You will win if you're a security company that's doing those things and focusing on those things moving forward here in the next 5 to 10 years for sure.
Yeah, no, I agree. And then, you know, as the company that's renting out those services, and we're talking to Guard Services right now, we have to remember to educate our folks at the corporate level. I've had experiences where, you know, we talk about co-employment. I had a guard specifically doing a duty that he should not have been doing. And I told, at this time when I was on the contract side of things, I told the corporate manager, you can't have him doing that. That's not his job. Well, corporate manager ordered this guy to do it and that guy got hurt. Guess who was their newest employee, right? You know, so they have to go from their company, the orders they get, you know, the standing orders they get from their company, and anything that was going to be different has to be funneled through that organization so that they can then be told, yeah, go ahead and do this, but it can't come from the company. If we're controlling them, then they are our employee. They are just a service that we're buying from them. And that's what a lot of people in the corporate world don't understand. You know, the admins are notoriously bad for this, going down and telling the guards that, you know, we got this, I need you to do this, I need you to do that. You got to go, whoa, time out. That's got to go through me. Why does that have to go through you? Because you don't have the ability to control them. Their boss is not me. Their boss is, you know, whatever company it might be, you put that moniker on there. And that's on us to educate our employees at the corporate level.
Oh, man. I think you do that and you scream into the wind. What in one ear out the next, you know?
I mean, co-employment, we could do an entire show on just different co-employment situations that shouldn't be occurring. And I think it's right. Unless you have a comment on this one, Scott, I was gonna talk a little bit about the future a little bit and where we think we're gonna go.
Let's do it. I wanted to try and understand where specifically in the future should we go with regulation of security guarding industry, but if you had something different, go for it.
No, we could let's tie them all in. Hey, we're just you know, like the old podcast, we want to do BSing about security. That's what we're doing, man, and that's the beauty about it. So, you know, there's a lot of budget reductions to me, I think, that went through, actually, that really overstrained everything in public law enforcement in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, early 80s, which created like this huge jump in security companies. It's kind of happening once again, where there's, you know, in the past 3 years, for sure, is it 4 years? I don't even know, but for sure the past 3 years has created this opportunity for security companies to really come up and, you know, and do some amazing things. And hopefully they are bringing this new technology with them as they're coming in. And hopefully they are bringing a new way of approaching the future of security. So with that being said, what do you guys think about the future of security? And Scott, I don't know if you, did you want to kick off on what you were saying earlier?
No. Go ahead. I want to hear from you, and then I'll throw it in there.
I think the technology is always going to be making things better. I think it's always maybe going to be reducing the size of the guard force that you have. But when we're talking about basics, all of this is always going to come back to a human being having to make a decision. No matter how much technology you have in place, the deciding factor is going to be a human being deciding yay or nay on what the technology is alerting us to. AI, I know, is the big thing. And you know, maybe someday we'll get to where Skynet, you know, thinks for us and we don't have to do any of that stuff. But I don't see that in our lifetime that happening. I think all the technology is going to be making our jobs a little bit easier, going to be eliminating the size of the people that we need out there potentially. But still, there's going to be somebody who has to make a decision on the information that's given to them.
Well, that actually feeds in nicely to what I was thinking about, because I think about deregulation a lot, and or just the government's inability to regulate. So, for example, what you're talking about, Jim, you know, having, sure, we're going to compute at the edge and we're going to have AI showing us the red car and the person wearing the green jacket and, you know, all the object detection recognition things with our cameras and some of our other sensors at the edge. But you still got to have somebody sitting someplace looking at all these things. Well, does that someone who's sitting there looking at all these things, or at least processing the data with a higher IQ than what we currently have with AI, and they're making a decision, or maybe it's they're monitoring something that's an evolving crisis. You know, there's a fire in a plant, you know, and they're monitoring that and they're able to dispatch resources. The sense that I have is that that person does not necessarily have to sit in a geographic location anymore. I think we're going to see that as we move closer, and maybe this isn't necessarily an offshoring type situation, because there's still some cultural aspects, and we all have, you know, GSOCs around the world, and we know the goods and the bads of that, and there's more goods than bads, by the way, but we all know the challenges there, right? If you don't know what the footprint is of the manufacturing facility, you're not able to perhaps dispatch the right amount of security or dispatch the right, you know, resources as you need, right? If you haven't never been on the ground in that location. But I think this is going to be something that the government will have trouble regulating. So, for example, as you are both in California, the Bureau of Security and Investigative Services regulates security guarding, uniform security guarding, both what we would call in-house, I forget what their term is for it.
Proprietary.
Yeah. I knew it was something stupid. State government for you. And then, you know, you have your contract security resource. And so our partners, you know, do they need, or especially our contract partners, do they actually need somebody who's licensed? Because that's what it is. It's a licensing, somebody who's licensed in another state who's doing this work. And I think we're going into that. The private investigations field is the same way. But I think we're going to see a lot of those challenges. Like, why would I be a licensed security provider? Because I don't have to be. I can do what I'm doing remotely.
Yeah,
I think we're going to see that. And I think it's interesting.
Yeah, I think some of the challenges you run into that with, you know, if going with offshoring, or heck, let's just stay with the United States. Let's get somebody down south and somebody from New York. I'm going to use my cousin Vinny for a good example. Excuse me, what's a Ute? You know, so just the way that people talk, you know, you can lose a lot. And it could take extra minutes because you're trying to figure out what this person is telling you. So, you know, there is a communication factor in there that,
you know, words
want
matter.
To be somewhat, you know, local, so that you guys can, you know, talk apples to apples and not be going, excuse me, what's a Ute?
Yeah, the youth.
Yeah. I ate a Ute one time. It's a fruit, I think, in Brazil, and it was delicious. But you know, I think what we need, everybody. So, you know, like I mentioned, 1955, right? The old American Society of Industrial Security, ASIS, decided to put together a lot of certifications and education. They kind of solidified standard. A little bit some standard state licensing. Even they helped push that on some of the states. You know, hopefully there'll be. Maybe that same body, and I'm not advocating for it or not, though I am a CPP, right? And we got some PSPs here and everything else. But maybe there'll be another body that will come up and start focusing on you know, the relationships in between multiple states. I like to see a day where if you're licensed in one state to do security, you know, there's an event. Yeah, there's an event in another state. You go ahead and you just go work that event, right? And it's very interesting to me how that works. And who knows? Who knows what the future will be like? But I think we're in the precipice of something something great. I always try to be as smart as Scotty there, Jim, but it's hard to use big words like he does. But I think we're at a moment in time where this would be a great opportunity as we get involved with more machine learning, right? As people are talking about quantum computing, as people are talking about AI and generative AI and how all of those things can possibly work within access control systems, camera systems, intrusion detection systems, all those things, we're at a point that maybe we should slow down a little bit and let's see, can we write some things up that are in the form of certifications or education or some kind of policies or licensing or whatever the case may be, really to lead us into the future. And I think this is a great moment for it. So I don't know what you guys think, but I love some closing thoughts on this, gents, and you know, we'll close this up. What do you think, Jim?
You know, the more that we learn, the more that we improve, the more you need to get back to basics, because you can't freeform unless you have the basics down. So you know, knowing how to do the basics allows you to then take on the bigger and better, more challenging things that are out there.
Perfect. I can't add anything to that. No, I think that's perfect.
I love that. There's nothing like a thumbs up, man. It's like, yeah, you're good. You're good. Well, listen, I think that's where we are. And going back to the basics is probably a good way to start that again, that conversation about new policies, procedures, certifications, anything, you know, a body, maybe a national body that really licenses the way these things go. And, you know, we constantly see in the news that every state is very different. Some states you don't even need a license. Some states they're very little even to carry a gun, you know, to do a job. Some states don't even need background to be a security person. Some states doesn't even, you know, and I think in order for us to make our industry better, sadly enough, I want to be an American. I have the right to do whatever I want. It's just one of those things that I think that we're going to need a little bit of, maybe not, I don't know if it's legislature the way it's supposed to be, but something that oversees what we're doing in order to become better and better and better, or at least at the lower levels of security where people are kind of just coming in, just understanding what security is, you know, through that supervisory position. I think there should be something there to really guide them to a bigger, better, brighter future. So that's the way I feel, Gentiles. But Big Jim, thank you, sir, once again for hanging out with us a little bit. We should definitely do some more. I like the co-employment stuff. I don't talk enough about that, though. Yeah. I am a huge advocate of non-co-employment on my side. I usually have to remind a lot of folks, especially the ones that are coming out of military, law enforcement, into security, like, no, let me show you how this works, right? Yeah. But I appreciate you, man. Thanks for spending a little time with Scotty and I.
Absolutely. And,
love to catch you again next time. All right, bud. All right.
Thanks, Jim.
See you guys. Appreciate
it. Got it. Hey, Scotty, it was another good one, man. I appreciate you as always. Thanks, Jim, for coming on and hanging out with us. So for everybody out there listening to us, I am Carlos Francisco.
And I'm Scott Walker.
This is Corporate Security University.
Security excellence through education.
All right, everybody. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Security Excellence Through Education, Corporate Security University.